Good morning. This is the KUNM Call-In Show. I'm Elaine Baumgartel. Thanks for joining us. In the wake of the terrorist attacks in Paris and San Bernardino, California, there's been an increase in anti-Muslim rhetoric in response to the shootings. This has been especially evident in the 2016 presidential campaigns, as one of the top Republican candidates, Donald Trump, has called for Muslims to be barred from entering the U.S. as visitors and as immigrants. President Obama, in his address to the nation on Sunday evening, called for Muslim communities in the U.S. and around the world to confront extremist ideas within Muslim communities. Locally, Governor Susana Martinez has said she does not want Syrian refugees to be resettled here. How is a widespread misunderstanding of Islam affecting the Muslim community here in New Mexico? And is anti-Muslim sentiment as strong as it was after the 9/11 attacks? Should the conversation be shifted? We'd like to hear from you this morning. And joining us to discuss, we have Izzy Mustafa, a UNM student and activist, and Professor Jamal Martin. He's the director of the UNM Peace and Justice Studies Program. He's also faculty in the Africana Studies Department and the Family and Community Medicine Program. Good morning to you both. Thanks for joining us.
Good morning.
Good morning.
We'd also like to hear from you this morning. Email callinshow@kunm.org. Post your comments on our Facebook page or tweet at KUNM News, where Ed Williams will be live tweeting the show this morning. First, I'd like to start with you both. Just ask you to tell us a little bit about yourselves and your relationship with Islam. Izzy, will you start?
Yeah. So my name is Izzy Mustafa, and I grew up Muslim. I consider myself a post 9/11 generation kid, and I grew up in a Palestinian Muslim household, and so the Islamophobia that happened after 9/11 directly shaped my life and shaped pretty much what I think right now, and how I go about my activism, and yeah.
Would you say you're a practicing Muslim now?
So right now I'm not a very religious or I'm not practicing Muslim, but I do run around Muslim circles. My family is still practicing, and
is it that idea of identifying as Muslim even though you might not be practicing?
Yeah, I grew up, you know, going to Sunday school. I grew up very connected to Islam. A lot of my family is still Muslim. And for me, I'm still connected to Islam, even though I'm not practicing.
So, Jamal Martin, tell me about yourself a little bit.
Well, I am the descendant of one of the millions of African Muslims who were brought here in slavery. And so my history has been one of where I've had to rediscover and recapture my inner core and my beliefs about what it means to be a human being and what humanity is all about and what dignity is. And so, yes, I am a practicing Muslim. You know, ashhadu an la ilaha illallah wa ashhadu anna Muhammadan Rasulullah. I bear witness that there is no God but Allah and Muhammad is his prophet. And I also teach philosophy, Islamic law at the university as well, every other semester or so. And so this is something that is very real and very, very much a part of my core in terms of what it means for me to be an ambassador of peace.
When you talk about rediscovering, can you contextualize that within your lifetime? How old were you when you reconnected?
Well, it happened when during the educational process when I was in elementary school. I attended a missionary school, and it was the same Roman Catholic school that my mother and her brothers and sisters had attended. And I asked questions which no one could give me answers to. And so I had a great-grandmother who told me to look deeper and look harder and to go back and study the Old Testament and the New Testament and make those decisions. And so I came through it during a period of time, when many African-Americans were discovering their African-Muslim roots during the 60s, although it existed long before that.
Thank you. We're also joined this morning by Samia Ased with the Albuquerque Center for Peace and Justice. Samia, I asked the other two members of our panel to briefly introduce themselves and explain their relationship with Islam. Would you do that as well?
Yes. Hi. I am a third-generation Palestinian-American. I am a proud Muslim. I am very involved in Islam, in the Islamic Center of New Mexico, in the Islamic community. I'm a mother of 9 kids who are also very involved in the center, And we are activists on many different fronts. And unfortunately, Islamophobia is one of the battles we are battling right now. And I didn't grow up with this kind of anti-rhetoric against Muslims, but my kids have. And I've seen them suffer tremendously. I've seen different groups, ethnicities have suffered at the hand of this kind of hateful rhetoric.
So talk to me a little bit about what your kids experienced growing up in New Mexico as young Muslims.
Well, their experience in New Mexico, per se, it's been very positive. I mean, I have to say Muslims in America in general, and especially in New Mexico, have flourished. It's a good place to be a Muslim. I always say I'm a better Muslim here in America than I am overseas.
What does that mean?
The culture barrier is not there. You're free to be who you are. You could be a moderate Muslim, a liberal Muslim, it doesn't matter. You're free. The notion of the way we practice law here in America, the Constitution, the separation between church and state is essential to Muslims. They separate it. They love it. I'm sorry. They love it. They cherish. They grow. They flourish. That's why you'll find them very assimilated in American societies compared to like Europe, France, where you're banned to be who you are. You can't wear a headscarf. You're not, you know, there's no freedom of religion. It's very important. So I say my kids have been very good Muslims, but they've been really good Americans, and they love the country.
And yet you say that your kids have experienced more anti-Muslim sentiment than you did yourself. Talk about that.
Well, growing up as an American, I never, well, there was no Islamophobia. I mean, there was different rhetoric, so it was every generation has its own phobia, political phobia. And right now it's Islam. I mean, with the wars overseas, and it's the rhetoric is a vote right now. Politicians play this to get votes. And the kids, unfortunately, you have a section in America who you know, are fearful of anything different, and it carries on to the kids. And I have, for instance, a friend who's in, whose daughter's in middle school, and she suffered a lot of attacks, calling her ISIS, poking at her. She wears a hijab. She's only 14, and she cries. She comes home crying. I have faced a few incidents as an adult in this time where we have I've got spat on. I've been chased, and predominantly by middle-aged white men. That's 3-4 incidents in New Mexico, and this is a pretty moderate, very, very loving state. I can't even imagine different parts of the country. My kids have dealt with Islamophobia. They've had to explain it. The misunderstanding, the misleading information that's fed to American people, some parts of America. It's, you know, like any other racist comments, you know, it's based on a lot of misinformation.
Jamal, I want to come back to you and put this question about generational phobias that Samia just said. Do you see it the same way?
I think there's a great deal of truth in that. You know, as I look back on my own experiences and the experiences of my children, 3 of my children were born in Hawaii, where we lived for many years. And we lived in a very strong, you know, Islamic community also, too. It was very much a very international community. In fact, the imam of our community was from mainland China, and he'd been the ambassador to Saudi Arabia for many years. And so they saw the whole spectrum of the rainbow and the diversity that existed within Islam and within the world. So, but I do think that it is a matter of timing. I think with the interest of all the wars that have been going on over the last 30 years or so, and people talking about 100 more years of war, which is reprehensible, the children have seen different things in many ways. But it is interesting to note that I think that in some cases, my children aren't attacked, you know, because they're Muslim, but they're attacked because they're African American. And so there's a difference there also, too.
Izzy, how do you talk about race and Muslim identity as overlapping in some ways and sometimes not?
Right. Well, I think it's really important because, you know, kind of what Dr. Jamal Martin and Sammy were saying, being somebody who grew up as, like I said, post 9/11 generation, is that you see anti-Muslim rhetoric being normalized and fixated on in the media and in our movies, like American Sniper, and you see the stereotype that Muslims are are Arab, Muslims are, you know, Pakistani. And it really, it ignores the fact that Islam is a very diverse religion. You have Muslims who, actually the largest population of Muslims come from Indonesia, which a lot of people don't know that. There are black Muslims here in America who are not only battling the Islamophobic front, but also fighting the anti-black sentiment that has been going on in this country since the beginning of it. You have a diverse range of Muslims, and the fact is that what's happening is you're seeing Americans completely stereotyping what Muslims look like. You have people of the Sikh community who are being targeted. They are the highest number targeted of hate crimes in the United States after 9/11. And, you know, it's fascinating when you have Donald Trump saying we need to ban the Muslims from coming to the United States. And what he's talking about is he's talking about Arabs and he's talking about South Asians. But people don't realize that there are native Muslims here in the United States as well. So how do you ban us all?
Mm-hmm. So there are multiple members of the faith community in Albuquerque who are speaking out in support of and in solidarity with the Muslim community here in New Mexico. We're joined on the phone right now by Father Frank Quintana of the Blessed Oscar Romero Catholic Community. Good morning, Father Quintana.
Good morning.
Thank you for joining us.
My pleasure.
Yeah, absolutely. You're hosting an event tonight along with the Albuquerque Center for Peace and Justice so that folks can write letters of support to members of the Muslim community. Why are you speaking out on this issue?
Well, I think it's important that we stand in solidarity with the Muslim community because they are our brothers and sisters in the great Abrahamic tradition. We are brothers and sisters. We are family, and it's important that we stand up for family, that they are out part of us in our great spiritual tradition. And so we want to stand firm in solidarity with them and let them know that they are welcome, that in our hearts they are part of us, and we want them here. And we want to stand against the banning of Muslims. We want to stand against the monitoring of mosques. We want to be family.
What do you think is, in your experience, the largest misunderstanding that folks in your Catholic community have about the Muslim community?
Well, I happen to have a very progressive community, so I don't know that many of my people have a misunderstanding, but I think that many people have zoned in on what some people have said about the violence of the Islamic community because of 9/11 and other things that that people mistakenly characterize about Muslim people, and that's certainly not been my experience. And I think that the witness and lives of Muslims in our midst, our doctors, our servicemen, our and women, our people of diverse backgrounds and occupations who serve this country well in whatever they do. It gives testimony to the fact that that we can live peacefully and in harmony with our Muslim brothers and sisters, that they are not a rabid, violent community seeking to overturn us.
Why focus a letter-writing campaign on sending letters to members of the Muslim community as opposed to political leaders or to people in elected office?
Well, there are letters being sent to political leaders and to Donald Trump by faith leaders and faith communities, but I want us to give the Albuquerque Center for Peace and Justice want to give a tangible, visible expression of love and fellowship and solidarity to the community. They're hearing too much. The Muslim community is hearing too much of what the media reports as being the sentiment of miscreants, and I want people of faith to be able to, and other people as well, not just people of faith, but other people in this community to express their solidarity and their welcoming, not only to our local Muslim people, but we want our governor to know that we welcome refugees as well.
So, Father Quintana, the final location of the event tonight, where will it be held?
The event sponsored by the Albuquerque Peace and Justice Center, Blessed Oscar Romero Community, it's going to be held at the offices of Southwest Organizing Project, 211 10th Street, and it's from 5 to 7 p.m. this evening.
Great. Thank you so much for joining us this morning, Father Quintana. We have, I know that there's a post on the KUNM Radio Facebook page with some of the details about where this event will be held if folks want to participate, and we really appreciate your time this morning.
My pleasure. Thank you so much.
All right. Thank you, sir. Father Quintana is not the only member of the faith community who's spoken out. Rabbi Arthur Flicker of the Congregation B'nai Israel co-signed a letter with the Imam Shafi Abdul Aziz of the Islamic Center of New Mexico. This letter was written to Mayor Richard Berry, asking him to call a meeting with faith leaders and leaders from racial and ethnic communities and to call for respect and religious and racial tolerance here in Albuquerque. Rabbi Flicker was not able to join us on the show this morning. He's on a plane, but I did speak to him briefly yesterday, and here's a little bit of what he had to say.
Many people in the community look to their religious leaders to set a tone. And so by coming together and setting a tone of respect and peace, hopefully that tone will then settle within the community. Our tradition teaches us that we're all children of God and that we are all equal. And therefore, to pick upon a particular group and give them some sort of evil tendencies and create fear about them is just wrong. We know that the Muslim community of New Mexico is scared of what's going on. The mosque was firebombed. They have a very specific example of hatred against them and of an attempt against their house of worship. That isn't right. People shouldn't live in fear just because of their religious beliefs.
That was Rabbi Arthur Flicker of Congregation B'nai Israel. He and the imam from the Islamic Center of New Mexico sent a letter to Mayor Richard Berry. The mayor was unable to join us on the show this morning as well, but he did send a statement. And in his statement, he said that he started convening faith leaders from around the city earlier this year to improve communication between religious denominations and to improve outreach to all faiths to develop mutual respect, support, and encourage interfaith dialogue. This from Mayor Berry's statement. He said that he hosts quarterly luncheons and looks forward to continuing this important work. He encourages any faith leader interested in getting involved in these quarterly luncheons to contact Deacon Stephen Rangel. And the number is 249-6416. We'll also post that on our website. The next meeting is in mid-January. We're going to go to break briefly, but when we come back, I want to hear from each of you whether this is enough. Okay, so we're going to take a quick break. Right now, we're talking about responses to Islamophobia and anti-Muslim sentiment on the KUNM Call-In Show. This is KUNM, and we'll be right back.
Edible Arrangements at 4770 Montgomery Boulevard Northeast in Albuquerque offers fresh fruit bouquets and chocolate-dipped fruit for holiday parties and family gatherings. EdibleArrangements.com. Edible Arrangements supports KUNM. Next time you lace up your running shoes, don't forget to take KUNM with you. Our new mobile app has live streaming, our two-week archive, podcasts, and much more to keep you company on your run. Search KUNM in the Apple App Store or Google Play and download today.
This Week in This American Life, Frank Sinatra.
Brassieres, I dig abroad with no brassieres.
Somebody once wrote about him that such beautiful music should emerge from such vulgarity is one of life's great mysteries.
When you're alone.
The contradictions, the stories. It's Sinatra's 100th birthday this week.
Sunday afternoons at 4 on KUNM.
This is the KUNM Collins Show. I'm Elaine Baumgartel. We're talking about responding to Islamophobia and anti-Muslim rhetoric this morning. And we're talking with Samia Ased with the Albuquerque Center for Peace and Justice, Izzy Mustafa, a UNM student and activist, and Professor Jamal Martin. He's the director of the UNM Peace and Justice Studies Program. We'd like to hear from you this morning as well. What do you want to hear from elected officials in response to anti-Muslim rhetoric? Are you satisfied with what you've heard so far? Or are New Mexico leaders not going far enough to denounce comments like those we've heard from Donald Trump and his supporters? The number to call locally here in Albuquerque is 277-5866. That's 277-5866. You can also call toll-free 877-899-5866 or email collinshow@kunm.org. Samia, what is your take on Mayor Barry's response? We also heard from Governor Susana Martinez, who told the Albuquerque Journal that she was disappointed in Donald Trump's comments and that his proposals don't reflect real leadership or a true solution to threats from extremists.
As far as Mayor Barry, I think his intentions are well. I would like him to reach out much more to the community. Governor Martinez, unfortunately, has a bad record when it comes to reaching out to the community. I don't feel she's in touch with many of the issues that affect the New Mexico community, whether it be the immigrants or refugees or indigenous communities. And as far as the Muslim community, her statement regarding Trump is totally unacceptable. She should be demanding that he not run for president. This is a Republican candidate who is actually advocating hate crime, hate speech. There are different parts of the world that right now are petitioning in England to bar him from going into England. This is a disgrace to America. This is unacceptable. It should never be tolerated to have hate speech directed to anyone, not just Muslims. So I would expect much more of a leadership. She should step up to the plate and demand that there was no way she would accept that.
Is he satisfying to you?
No. So the comments made by Donald Trump is a symptom and not the disease. And what I mean by that is that U.S. federal and representatives in local politics are continuing not just spewing anti-Islam rhetoric. Like, they might not fully spew anti-Islam rhetoric, but they show it in their actions. You see, after 9/11, instead of engaging with the Muslim community, the Bush administration actively went to Muslim countries like Iraq and Afghanistan and actually hurt the people there, and, you know, wiped out entire, you know, not entire, but like entire families. And it spilled over into the U.S. in the rhetoric, in the mainstream media, creating this hostility in the sphere towards the Muslim community. And so for me, the response, you know, you can denounce Donald Trump, but Donald Trump is not the problem. The problem is that he is speaking out loud what politicians are doing behind closed doors. And so I think it's really important that Mayor Richard Berry and Susana Martinez, they can condemn or in the situation of Martinez, you know, support Donald Trump. But the fact of the matter is the politicians in New Mexico and in the United States aren't doing enough, and they're actually hurting the Muslim community by their actions and not just their words.
Jamal, have you seen comments from other elected officials in New Mexico in support of the Muslim community?
I've seen a few, and and obviously this is divided along, you know, the political spectrum in terms of the two-party system. Unfortunately, this is very disturbing in a number of different ways. But I think the issue here is one about power. Who has power, who controls it, how it's used, and other types of things. And so what I've seen is a great deal of pandering in many ways. And, you know, I'm often reminded of something that Malcolm X once said about American politics, and that is, one is a fox and the other one is a wolf. And it depends on which one, how you want to be devoured. One is going to be honest and come right out to you. One creature is going to be honest and come right out to you and just bite you in the backside. But another is going to be kind of sneaky and nip you at the heels. And so there's not enough done in many ways. I mean, you spoke about the issue earlier of the interfaith dialogues, which I've been a part of for many, many years. And so the issue is not so much with our co-religionists. but it's all those other folks who profess something other and what their motives are and what their hidden agendas are. And so those messages, have to really be taken directly to the people. And I don't think politicians are ones who can really sort of carry that message forth because there are selfish reasons for staying and maintaining power and their own power and privilege. So there's a lot more to be said about that in many ways. But I agree with my colleagues on the panel here that it's simply just not enough. We really do have to get to the root causes of problems. And that's something I always argue in my classes and things. You know, in this country, in many places, we spend too much energy trying to deal with the effects and not dealing with the root causes. And as a public health scientist, as an epidemiologist, I'm a firm believer in prevention. Prevention is better than cure.
We're going to go to the phone now. Imam Shafi Abdul Aziz of the Islamic Center of New Mexico is on the line. Good morning.
Yes, good morning. How are you?
I'm doing very well, thank you. Thank you for calling in. Please jump in. Are you satisfied with some of the responses that we've heard from elected officials in New Mexico to anti-Muslim rhetoric and Islamophobia?
I will say that, as I said, we are very calm, we are very peaceful, we are very rational about the rhetoric and sentiment made by some self-appointed, but I will say selfish leaders who are not wishing the American nation and American people peace, prosperity and security. But at the same time, I want to commend and I want to thank both interfaith leaders in our state and in the nation. I want to appreciate and thank activists. I want to thank and appreciate even our governor on her latest statement that Islam should be Islam, Muslims, and religion, organizations, and the community should be respected. But first, I want to thank you for hosting this program. I have a few things that I want to say because I want to leave chance to the great panelists who are doing a good job today, including my big brother, Jamal. One thing that Muslims should do is that those who migrated to America or those who were born in America as Muslims, I think it is also high time that we don't consider ourselves as a second-class citizen. This is a problem with some Muslims. Inferiority complex should not exist. We are America. We are part of America. We are citizens. And so we have to be proud of being American, not considering ourselves as second class.
Imam, may I ask you a question?
Yes.
How do you articulate that to folks who attend your mosque, this idea of resisting a sense of inferiority that I think the folks on the panel have articulated is placed upon Muslims in the U.S. as opposed to originating within Muslims in the U.S. How do you articulate that to folks who attend?
I of course, we meet five times every day in the mosque. We also have a bigger gathering once a week every Friday. We have prayers and preaching. And first, a spiritual perspective, we believe that the earth belongs to God. And everybody has rights to live everywhere. Secondly, since that we are in America, or some of us came to America, the fact that some of us were born in America, we have every right. We have every right like any other American citizen. And so, as the panelist said, that we have contributed immensely to the development of this country. We are doctors. Dr. Jamal is right there. We are students. Students are right there. We are mothers and fathers. We are parents. My sister is there. We are lecturers. We are doctors. We are scientists at Sandia. We are America. And so being considered, for example, to be foreigners, to the extent that once we travel outside America, we should not be allowed to come back to America. I mean, this is ignorant. And this was not expected to have come from such a, you know, a wild figure who is trying to be a leader. And so I've been encouraging people that we are human beings. We were created by God. The earth belongs to God. America was created by God. And we are Americans. We are Muslims and Americans. And we should be a law-abiding citizen, but at the same time, we should keep our identity as Muslims. Yep.
Thank you. Thank you, Imam, for calling in this morning. I'm so glad that we were able to hear from you today. I'm going to take a phone call now from Penelope in Albuquerque. Good morning, Penelope.
Good morning. I spent almost 7 years in Egypt and was married to an Egyptian and have a half-Egyptian daughter. After 9/11, I was in Baltimore. And my daughter had been working in a subway that was owned by Egyptians. And it had been Ramadan. And they had been playing the Quran over their PA system. And the first thing I did when I heard about this is I looked for my daughter because I was terrified that some jerk was going to come in with a high-powered weapon and shoot up everybody in the store. So That relationship has fostered my respect for and understanding of Islam and my sympathy with people who are persecuted just because they are Islamic. And so in thinking about the terrible stuff that's going on today. I mean, some of these comments are ridiculous by our so-called leaders. I believe personally, from my own experience, that when you know people personally as friends, then you are protective towards them. You're not going to let them be hurt by stupidity, and so I would like to see, and I'd love to hear ideas coming from this group of how you can have public events, say a celebration of Middle Eastern food would be the best thing, because food is always a good way to bring people together, and bring Islamic people and non-Islamic people together to share a meal and to learn about each other.
Thanks. Hey, Penelope, I'm gonna stop you there and thank you for your comment because I want to see if we can get some more folks to call in. Are you or someone you know a Muslim in New Mexico? What is your experience? Are non-Muslim New Mexicans supportive of you and your faith, or are you experiencing discrimination because you are a Muslim? Please give us a call now. The number is 277-5866 here in Albuquerque. That's 277-5866. You can also call toll-free 877-899-5866. You can post comments to our Facebook page, KUNM Radio. Panelists, Jamal, Izzy, Samia, I want you all to take a moment to respond to the imam's comments. Samia, what are your thoughts?
Well, there's a few thoughts, actually. with the imam, I thank him for calling in, and like the other, and Father Frank as well. I have to touch on a few things as far as Muslims and second-class citizens. Okay. Muslims in America are pretty much successful. They are, like we said, professionals. They're business people. They have climbed a ladder of success because they are free to be who they are, and they love the community. One of the facts that's probably not out there a lot is the Muslim community fight hand in hand and to the FBI and the American government in fighting terrorism. They have foiled 60 attempts of recruiting like ISIS tries to recruit different people here to attack.
And yet, President Obama in his comments on Sunday night called to the Muslim community in the U.S. and around the world to basically step up this response to extremism. Do you feel that request was out of place, that it's already being done?
Yeah, what I was trying to say is the 60 attempts was people are already turning in. It's hard to recruit Muslims in America because people are very content with their life here. We're very happy. I'm upset with the president. He did not touch on the other shooters. We have mass shootings in America. There's 355 mass shootings. You touch on the Muslims, which is a valid concern with the terror issue. But we also have to, when we talk about ISIS, we have to talk about what's happening in the Middle East. You cannot separate both. The radicalization and the criminal elements of ISIS is a reaction to the war in Iraq. And we have to address issues. We have to be a little more sophisticated as an American community, as American voters. Recognize where your votes go and recognize where your dollars are going. You have to understand there's a connection. Now, going back to the mass shootings in America, I didn't get this reaction when you had the Colorado shooting at the Planned Parenthood. There's a double standard. I'm upset that every time there's a Muslim or a so-called Muslim that hijacks a religion in the name of Islam and commits a crime, an atrocity that we do not accept, no matter what, this is America, this is our country, but there has to be the same standard set for everybody else in this country. You have to hold accountable every other criminal. You have to hold white radicals as well accountable. Are they helping you? And gun control comes into this as well.
And we will be continuing that conversation on gun control next week on The Colin Show, Thursday morning at 8. So for those of you who were expecting that conversation this morning, that show will take place next week. We're going to take a quick break and come right back to Jamal and Izzy, and then we'll go to the phones and take a few calls. We're talking about responding to anti-Muslim sentiment and Islamophobia today on The KUNM Colin Show. We're going to take a break, and we'll be right back.
Support comes from UNM Continuing Education, where certificate programs and classes in business and technology build new skills and new careers. For a winter catalog, visit ce.unm.edu.
Did that last set tickle your ears or reach your heart? I'm Matthew Finch, KUNM Music Director. If this kind of variety and depth is what you demand in a music show, now's the time to support KUNM. Our phone room's closed right now, but you don't have to wait to make your pledge of support. Just go to KUNM.org and click Support This Station, and we'd love to count you as a member.
Latin music.
Rock, pop, tangos, Latin jazz, Brazilian, flamenco.
Rancheras, música caribeña, corridos, y mucho más.
When?
Saturdays, 2 to 5 in the afternoon.
Raíces, desde la casa de KUNM 89.9 a su casa.
O a su carro.
A su vida.
This is the KUNM Colin Show. I'm Elaine Baumgartel. We're talking about responding to anti-Muslim sentiment this morning. We have Samia Asad with the Albuquerque Center for Peace and Justice, Izzy Mustafa, a UNM student and activist, and Professor Jamal Martin. He's director of the UNM Peace and Justice Studies Program. Izzy, your comments.
Yeah. So I would just want to say respectfully to Imam Shafi, I do disagree with him on a few points. In terms of Muslims saying that they they have an inferiority complex, I just want to say that in these times in this country, when something goes down and a Muslim name is tied to it, everybody looks to the Muslim community to apologize, to condemn what happened. And for me, what does the Muslim community of New Mexico have to do with the attacks in Paris? Why do we have to come out and condemn something that isn't, related to us? And it's actually interesting, right? Even if you look at the Middle East, even if you look at the politics of, let's talk about ISIS, right? ISIS is a radical fringe group that many people in the Middle East hate, honestly. And even if you can look at the language, right? In the Middle East, nobody says ISIS. No one legitimizes the Islamic State. They say Daesh. Daesh in Arabic means people who create chaos, the chaotic ones, right? So already in the language, you have Muslims, you know, condemning ISIS. And going back to California, the shootings that took place in California, you know, everybody was afraid. You know, every time something happens, Muslim Americans are like, oh, my God, I hope they aren't Muslim. I hope they don't have a Muslim name. And when it came forth that
there are folks who are non-Muslim who think the same thing.
Yeah, exactly. Because right. we understand the implications, what happened. Like Samia said, you know, last week or 2 weeks ago, the shooting in Colorado happened at Planned Parenthood. And nothing, you know, no policies were changed because of that. If anything, the day after, the House voted to cut funding to Planned Parenthood. After the shootings in California, you see the House of Representatives passing bills trying to make Muslims second-class citizens, Muslim Americans. And so I think it's important to understand that, you know, that there's a direct link between, you know, the idea that Muslim Americans, you know, I always say this in a lot of ways, and I'm not anti-American, but the policies and the rhetoric that's happening now make, you know, it makes it seem as if America is anti-me, right? Anti-Muslim.
Jamal.
Well, there's a great deal of diversity of thought and opinion in here, which is very well respected within al-Islam. As we listen to these commentaries, I want to say that one of our responses as a community is to enjoin each other in truth and constancy and be patient in that faith. And as we deal with the Daesh and the chaos, you know, my thought on this is that at some point as a believer, countering violent extremism to me means that we have to talk about the structural violence that exists within the societies and the structural violence that prevents people from achieving their human dignity and getting their basic needs. And so life and death matters. Human dignity matters. And so there comes a point when you can say, how much do we tolerate in terms of when we see these violent, extreme things going on at some point? How do we speak about them? Muslims have been taught to learn that if you see something wrong, you change it by speaking out against it. If you can't change it by speaking out against it, you change it by, you know, using your hand to grab someone and say, hey, stop, don't do that. And if you can't do that, then you change it in your heart and you don't commit those practices and do those types of things. And so as we move forward with this, obviously we have to have much more dialogue rather than debate. As we've discussed before, this is a situation where we have to have conversations, you know, on a level where we deal with our own humanity and the humanity of others. It's at some point. I will say this, though, through my work and my studies, I note that our biggest enemies are fear, doubt, ignorance, and superstition. And the only way to overcome fear, doubt, ignorance, and superstition is to establish truth, justice, mercy, and compassion. And that's something that I think all people want and hold true dear. But so how do we establish that? And again, it's about having those dialogues.
Well, and you and I, when we were speaking a couple of days ago in preparation for the show, you and I talked about the difference between debate and dialogue. Debate being two sides with very solidified positions trying to convince the other one that their argument is better, that their evidence is more overwhelming, and there's not room for shifting, for changing, for consensus building, whereas dialogue is more of a fluid exchange of experiences, ideas, beliefs, with the potential for deeper understanding and shifting, as opposed to a winner, I think, as you put it when we were talking before. Let's go to the phones right now. Romeo in Albuquerque. Good morning, Romeo. You're on the air.
Oh, good morning, Elaine. Interesting topic today, and I appreciate that you guys are addressing the issue. I, however, take kind of Christopher Hitchens' point of view on this whole situation. I mean, it's okay to point out that there is some anti-Muslim rhetoric out there. The environment is ripe with fear for someone like Trump to, you know, build his cause off that, much like Hitler did. And but at the end of the day, isn't it religion itself that we need to blame for the problems we face in the world? And I'm disappointed that it hasn't even been addressed. I mean, it's fine to have freedom of religion like we do, but what about freedom from religion? I feel like it's being thrown in my face right now. I almost turned it off, but then I thought, if I don't say something, who will? And, you know, I played on sports teams, and I was always told and taught that your personal conduct reflects not only on yourself, but on the rest of your group. So be a cool dude. So how about we take some personal responsibility instead of saying it's God's will, and just be cool people? That's all I got to say. I'm out.
All right, Romeo. Thanks for your call. Let's take another call. Joseph in Albuquerque. Good morning, Joseph. You're on the way. You're on the air. Joseph, are you there? Okay, we'll move on. Let's try Rosemary in Albuquerque. Good morning, Rosemary. You're on the air.
Good morning. Good morning. Can you hear me?
We sure can. Go ahead.
Okay. Well, as I was just saying to the gentleman who answered your phone, I think it's important not only that we recognize the need to support our Muslim friends and neighbors and fellow citizens and world visitors, but that we Americans start supporting our own American traditions. It is positively unpatriotic to be running away from a respect for universal human dignity as soon as something scary happens. My background here is that I'm the chair of the United Nations Association here in Albuquerque, and I'm the chair of the Human Rights Education Community in the National Council for the Social Studies. And so we go out of our way to teach about human rights, and we teach it as teach about human rights as something that's got strong American roots going back to George Washington and going through all of the most scary periods in American history, when American leaders were standing up and saying the only way to protect the dignity of any is to protect the dignity of all. Yes. And so how people can be seeking the office of president by suggesting that we repudiate our own tradition of respect for the human dignity of everybody really, really challenges me, I must say. You know, this is Universal Human Rights Day, so this is a very important day for you to be having this discussion, because if the country that gave us Eleanor Roosevelt, that chaired the committee that drafted the Universal Declaration of Human Rights, that gave us Robert Jackson, that established the Nuremberg Principles at the Nuremberg Trials, if that country can't stand up for the human dignity of our Muslim neighbors, our Muslim fellow citizens, people all over the world who are seeking freedom, then we're really kind of spitting in the face of our most heroic ancestors.
Rosemary, thank you for your comments this morning. We also have a Facebook comment from Margaret. This is a bigger issue than anti-Islamic rhetoric, she says. As a society, not just politicians, we have not done and do not do adequate work to eliminate racism in general, xenophobia, fear of difference in general. We also got an email from Jean in Albuquerque. She says, Albuquerque Mayor Richard Berry, I believe Governor Susana Martinez and Donald Trump are disrespecting Muslims by not welcoming refugees. And also a Facebook comment this morning at KUNM Radio, reminding us that today, December 10th, is International Human Rights Day, as Rosemary just mentioned. Jamal, you wanted to jump in.
Yes. The issue of human rights. One of the things I want to say is that many people who have not really looked at the study and the knowledge of al-Islam sometimes look at it through a very skewed lens. But I do want to say this, that the human rights issue is not inherently an American issue. When you go back and you look at the history, and I pointed this out to some students when I gave a talk at the Middlebury Institute for Conflict Studies a couple of weeks ago. Yes, France has the Declaration of Human Rights, things of that nature. But in the 7th century, during the time of the Prophet Muhammad, in his last speech and sermon, he gave a speech that is the epitome of human rights today. And that issue dealt with racism. It dealt with women's rights. It dealt with monopoly. It dealt with how you deal with money and capitalism. He listed a whole slew of, you know, of items that are reflective of that today. And when you look at the interchanges between the Western world and the Islamic world and that share of knowledge, people learned those things. I mean, even Jefferson had a copy of his Quran that he read before he wrote the Declaration of Independence. And you see a lot of those bases within this law. I think that New Mexico has a very important role to play in this, because when you think about the whole issue of the global age of Spain, when Muslims, Jews, and Christians worked together. There was friction, but they worked together. There's a model in that, and New Mexico has that heritage. And so how do we implement that here and show the rest of the nation how to behave?
Let's take another call from Joel in Albuquerque. Good morning, Joel. You're on the air.
Oh, yeah. Thank you. You know, I'd like to kind of, really discount this whole myth, this new atheism. I'm a secular person myself, but I also realize that religion has two different sides. I mean, you have Christians who can be very reactionary, such as the KKK, but you have Christians such as Dr. Martin Luther King Jr., who can be very progressive in their thought. And the same thing goes with Muslims. You know, we have this radicalization of Islam, but then you have people who are highly religious, like Malcolm X, an individual who is highly religious, you know, a very devout Muslim, but what did he fight for, which was civil rights? And, you know, I think it's also important to point out that much of the scientific advancements that have happened within our existence as humanity has been done from Muslims, you know, algebra, the concept of inoculation, so on and so forth. When in Europe people were dying in the Dark Ages, Islam was flourishing and contributing to science. So there's a good side and a bad side to religion is all I'm saying.
Great, Joel. Thank you. Let's take one more call. This will be our last call of the morning from Saeed in Albuquerque. Good morning, Saeed.
Good morning.
Please go ahead. Good morning. What would you like to contribute to our conversation this morning?
Yeah, I want to say one last thing is that even though all the issues that your guests have addressed, they're true and they're serious, but there's a side that people don't see often, and an example of that side is something happened to one of my friends. His name is Mustafa, and I don't know if he hears me now or not, but if something happened to him right after the California shooting, he went to his regular soccer game, and he said on that day there was something different. Right after that shooting, some white guy, he said, today we're going to play it in a different way. So people wondered, like, how different? He said, don't consider me racist, but we're going to play it as Muslims' team against Christians' team. And that was a surprise to my Muslim friend. He never, you know, had this categorization between him and his friends. But he couldn't withdraw. He told me I couldn't withdraw it. It's like I'm not proud of my religion. So he said, I'm in. And he
announced. Hey, Saeed, I mean, can you wrap it up really quick? We're right at the very end of the show.
And the shock he told me about is that everyone moved to his side. And that guy, he stood up alone. And everyone told him, if you're going to play, maybe you should play by yourself.
All right. All right. Hey, Saeed, thank you for your comments. Thank you to Jamal Martin, professor and director of the UNM Center, Peace and Justice Studies Program. Samia Ased with the Albuquerque Center for Peace and Justice. Thank you for joining us this morning.
Thank
also,
you.
Izzy Mustafa, UNM student and activist. Thanks all for your comments. We are wrapping up the show right now. Thank you to our callers. We do post the audio of this show online, so you'll be able to find it and the audio from other shows online at kunm.org. You can email any follow-up comments to collinshow@kunm.org. Thanks to Jefferson White, our engineer today. Rashad Mahmood screened your calls this morning. Ed Williams assisted with production along with Derek Toledo. I am your executive producer and the host of the show, Elaine Baumgartel. And this is KUNM. Thanks so much for joining us.